And we're back at the Drone Cage. You're listening to EA Radio, and we're on the fly over at the Aviation Gateway Park, flying some drones. We got some jets flying around too. There might possibly be an airport around here somewhere. That's kind of goes with the territory, I guess. Manny, we're flying drones and having fun. What do we have going on next here?
We've got Kendall Klutz from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. He's got a home-built FPV racer. This is some of the coolest technology in drones today. This is what's bringing kids in the door and introducing them to aviation. I've got with me from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, Dave 30-Acre, and he's going to tell us about the drone, some of the programming that they have, and what they bring to Oshkosh this year.
And Dave, tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Well, I'm an assistant professor for Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University worldwide. I spent 27 years in the Air Force flying F-16s and other stuff as a operational test pilot. And now I'm heading on to the educational part of it, which is one of the great things about Embry-Riddle. You don't have professors that have read about it a lot. You have professors that have actually been out there and doing it. So we've come over here and we're sponsoring the Drone Cage. We also have a huge display of all of our flight activity back about 200 yards behind us here. You can't miss it back there. We're happy to be part of this today. I'd like to introduce one of our students here from down at Daytona Beach. This is Kendall Klutz, and he is flying his home-built quad racer here. This is actually a Vortex racer, and if you've seen some of this stuff before and you're a pilot, you will enjoy the excess power that these things have and the excess thrust. It's pretty amazing what he can do with this. But this is just an example of some of the technology that's out there now. Kendall is actually in our program in Daytona Beach for the Bachelor of Science of Unmanned Aircraft System Science. So we're the first ones out there to put together some programs for this technology. We have bachelor's degrees and master's degrees in this. We also have the same in aeronautical science and aeronautical engineering, where you learn how these things really work. They code them themselves, they build them themselves, they put them all together, and the technology is just off the chart. So speaking of the technology, one of the great things about this he has right here, this is called an FPV racer, which is first person view, and you can take a look right on in there and you can see in the goggles what he is could be looking at out the front of that racer. So you'll see him later on. He's going to put a lighter battery in this here in a few minutes, and you'll see him do a few laps and do a little bit of acro with it, and then he'll put those goggles on, and you'll be able to see what he is seeing.
Oh, wow.
We just had the Drone Nationals about 2 weeks ago, and this has become a huge, huge racing new field here. So you can see through there.
Goggles are cool, and they kind of hum. They're vibrating.
He actually has a cooling fan on that now.
They massage your face at the same time. It's a double feature. I'm sure this isn't cheap.
Well, those go for about $500. There's all sorts of different versions of them, but we always say to buy the best ones, because if you don't, you'll be disappointed. You want the ones with the highest resolution in there. This quadcopter he's flying right now, he's got probably about $2,500 into that one.
And it's a kit. I heard you say it's a kit built.
Well, by kit, I would say it's more modular is really what it is. You can design them the way you want them to do what you want them to do.
And so give us an example of what different types of things you might want to do.
Well, this one is really built for fun. It's built for racing. It's built for speed. He can do a lot of acro with it. And unlike some of the other ones out there, he's doing all that right there strictly manual. He's not pushing a button that's making it flip. He's manually working the controls. And if you watch his hands, he's busy back there. He makes it look extremely easy. But this is several years of practice to get to this stage to do this.
It's very impressive. And it's just so cool. And it's so confined, you know, when you fly RC airplanes, helicopters are different, but RC airplanes, you need space, you need room. These little copters, you can just fly in a very confined area.
You sure can. A lot of people think they're toys, and there are some toys out there, but when you start doing the math behind some of these, that weighs about 3.5 pounds or so, and if it goes 70 miles an hour, you get quite a bit of 1.5 mv² piled in. Matter of fact, when that thing's going as fast as it can, you have about 4 times the amount of kinetic energy as a 44 Magnum coming out of the barrel. So they're not toys. You got to be safe around them, and that's the safety culture of Embry-Riddle. We make sure that we are safe in everything we do, and that goes into our unmanned systems programs as well.
Now, Dave, you have a degree program at Embry-Riddle for these. Is that kind of focusing down the road on a career path that might involve, flying a power line patrol or a gas pipeline patrol, something along those lines?
Absolutely. The applications are just unlimited. all the things you mentioned, plus you start looking at the firefighting capability, the way the military uses it a lot is for situational awareness above a fight, so that now if you're in a situation, standoff with police or firefighters, you have that overhead look where you can identify good and bad folks and everything else that way. Power line inspections, infrastructure, dams, bridges, all that type of work. Plus, you know, you have companies out there looking to deliver things too.
Oh yeah, one in particular. I don't know how far along the process they are with that, but it seems like there's a lot of challenges to be overcome with that.
Well, there program. Are, and a lot of it's the safety side of it. And while a lot of people are really upset with the FAA on this, you have to take a look at what they're trying to do right now. When you're talking about putting millions of more aircraft into the national airspace system and you're worried about safety and what happens if one of these runs into an airplane, you got to take it slow. So I find myself defending the FAA more these days than I used to, because they have a really big project ahead of them to integrate these things in, and they're doing a great job.
Yeah, and I think there's quite a bit going on right here at AirVenture in forums and meetings and conferences, trying to get down a road that will overcome some of these challenges.
One of the biggest problems is just plain ignorance. You can go buy these things right online, have it show up at your door, you pull it out of the box, and you think you can go fly it right away. But you've got to know the systems, because unlike in general aviation, say you have a Garmin 1000 or a six-pack in the aircraft, you go to another aircraft, they're going to be very similar. The interfaces on these, especially the computers, you can imagine getting into an aircraft with something like a Garmin 1000, and every one of them is different, and that's where we're at right now. There's really not a standard set up, so you really have to know the software inside and out and the quirks of it.
Now he's flying around this pole here. Normally out here you do have a competitive side to this as well, right?
That's right. From 3 to 5 daily, we've hosted a challenge out here where we have some small quadcopters that are donated by Horizon Hobby and by Hobby Co. And we come out here and let folks come out and show off and see what they can do. The record around the course has been 20 seconds, so it's been pretty quick, and we have some great competition going on.
Now, people can't see it now, but during that time, they set up these stanchions, and they have to fly around the stanchions. It's quite interesting, and it can be quite fun, it looks like.
That's right, and you have to have some experience. It's not a beginner's course by any means, and we have a lot of fun with it. And I think Kendall's going to probably bring that one down here and put a different battery on it pretty quick so he can do some more speed work with that. And again, as he runs around here, you can take a look at those goggles again and see what it looks like through the goggles.
Tell us a little bit while he's doing that, putting that battery change in, tell us a little bit about the degree program, how someone gets enrolled at Emory-Riddle to get a degree in the drone technology side.
Well, we've been online longer than anybody else has out there. So we were one of the originals that started online programs through our worldwide. But we also have the campuses down at Daytona Beach and out of Prescott, Arizona, where we do everything from flight training, helicopter, to up to ATPs, multi-engine and all that, which is where we got our start. But we've been the number one aeronautical engineering school in the world for about the last 10 years, an awful lot there. And the alumni network that we have is fabulous. So if you head on down to our display right down the road and to the
right
chalet,
behind us here,
absolutely about 200 yards behind us, you can go down there and talk to the admission folks in that area and sit down and watch a video of the campuses and take a look and see what we're all about.
Looks like he's got a new battery in there and it's off and running.
All right. So he'll be doing a little bit more acro. You can see, like I said, this is all manual that he's doing. There's nothing automatic about this. And I guarantee you, if someone who's flown that Inspire and that's all they've really done, pick this thing up right now, they'd last about 2 seconds in the air, because it's that touchy. Yeah.
That'd be you, Manny? Manny's taking credit for that description.
And Kendall, I can hand you these goggles right now. You want to maybe spin around and see how fast we can spin around this thing in the next couple minutes? Give you guys an idea of the speed and what it's capable of doing. Gonna probably want a chair. Can we get a chair from back here, please? Because as you can imagine, with this on your head, as that thing's flying
dizzy,
around,
huh?
You can get dizzy in a hurry.
I get dizzy just watching it from here. I don't know what's going to happen with him.
So we are talking about some of our degree programs. We have a Master's of Science of Unmanned Systems. It doesn't just look at airborne systems, but all of them down there, subsurface, underwater, and everything else. And then we also have bachelor's degrees out there in unmanned systems applications as well.
So this is all tied into the unmanned systems program.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, we've always been a leader in everything to do with aviation. And this is one of the phases of aviation that's coming up, and it's just going to get more involved, and we're going to supply the industry out there with well-qualified graduates.
If you told me 3 years ago that you could go get a bachelor's degree in drone flying, I would have been like, yeah, no, you're crazy. Maybe like underwater basket weaving or something, but it really exists.
Absolutely. All right, so the problem is, and this is one we've run into a little bit before here, these use a 2.4 gigahertz band for control, and then they use 5.8 for the transmission of the video. But in this environment over here, with everybody with Wi-Fi going on and a transmission coming from back here, it really gets in the way. And interestingly enough, this is one of my favorite areas to get into, is the spectrum management of these things, which is a field that folks really haven't looked at yet. When you take a look at how this is going to go crazy over the next few years, the ability to be able to have a secure data link between the aircraft is on the top of the list. We're kind of right now where computers were back in the mid-80s, where nobody worried about viruses or interference or anybody doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. And this is a pretty easy signal to jam. So just with all the users around here with Wi-Fi in the 5.8 gigahertz band, he wasn't able to see on those goggles with it being very far away from him. So that's why he shut it down.
Well, we're putting a lot of RF everywhere here ourselves, so we have to take some credit for that. We're all about RF here in the radio business. And then we got the video streaming guys. There's the RF everywhere. But he's still able to do all kinds of fancy tricks and loops and...
Right, so his control right now, the issue is, so he has a controller in his hand which is transmitting to that at 2.4 gigahertz using the standard ISM band. The little antenna on top of it is using 5.8. It's a 5.8 gigahertz circular polarized antenna. That's exactly right. So that's pumping the data back to the headset that he has back here, because typically you like to separate those two processes as far as sending control to the aircraft and sending the video back.
Well, it sure is a lot of fun, and I encourage anybody who's here at AirVenture to, if you haven't gotten by the new Aviation Gateway Park over here, just across the street from Building A and Convention Headquarters, it's something you don't want to miss here at AirVenture, the drone cage, brand new for 2015. And we're going to do some more of this flying, aren't we, for another 15 minutes or so. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back out to the drone cage, we're going to talk more about these cool machines. Thanks, Dave. J-Mon-G, we're on the fly, EA Radio, and we're at the drone cage today. Tomorrow we'll be at the seaplane base for our Saturday show. For now, we're just going to take a quick break and come right back to drones. You're listening to EAA Radio.